$1 left to go. Don't let this challenge lie on the table. Help us make it now before we get into the local edition. 845-482-4141. Please call now. Give what you can at 845-482-4141.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Hi, I'm Brent Jones, Senior News Apps Developer at NPR.
I'm Casey Morell, and I produce the NPR Politics Podcast.
My name is Kristen Hartman. I'm the Senior Manager of Business Development at NPR. Right.
I work in public media for a lot of reasons, but the main one is that
first word, public.
What we do is available to everyone, everywhere.
I started at NPR answering phones when listeners called. And I stay in public media because I'm just insatiably curious about what we can do and create when we all work together.
I've worked in public media for more than a decade because I believe it's important to help people understand the world around them, how we got here, what's happening now, where we're going, and why it matters to all of us.
Help keep public media strong today by making a donation to this station. Here's how, and thank you.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Live from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm your host, Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me this rainy Friday evening. We'll make sure we take another look at the weather before we go. Looks like it's going to get colder and wetter, though, before this is all through. Coming up, we get an update on bird flu. Also, the latest news from the Seongguk Journal. It's our regular check-in. Chris Riley, Seongguk Journal. But first, let's get the latest news out of Albany, because you may have noticed the New York State budget is now late. It's now nearly 2 weeks late, in fact, as we're heading into mid-April here. It was due on April 1st, and lawmakers are due back on Monday afternoon to get back to work on this and try to pass a fourth extender to keep the government running while they work things out. Karen DeWitt has more. Apologies, one moment. Here's Karen DeWitt.
Republicans, who are in the minority party in state government, criticize Democrats, including Governor Kathy Hochul and the leaders of the legislature, for failing to come to an accord on a spending plan that was due back on April 1st. Senator Tom O'Mara, the ranking GOP member on the Senate Finance Committee, spoke on the Senate floor as another budget extender was approved.
And we should be working far more diligently to get this job done, rather than just extending the budget deadline.
Issues that are dividing Hochul and the Democrats in the legislature include a housing package, how to distribute school aid, and how much to spend on Medicaid, including whether to make changes to a popular home health care program. Hochul and the Democratic leaders have said little publicly about exactly what divides them or the status of negotiations. Assembly Minority Leader William Barclay decried the lack of transparency. He says in earlier days, the Albany adage was three men in a room. That described the private meetings held between governors and the two majority party legislative leaders. Now, he says, there are two women and one man, but the dynamic has not changed.
It used to be always three men in a room. They're making backroom doors. It wasn't helpful to New Yorkers. Don't hear much about that now. It's three Dems in the room.
Senator Jim Todisco, also a Republican, made an analogy to the recent total solar eclipse. He says his constituents don't like the secrecy, and they don't like it when lawmakers don't meet their deadlines.
They said it would take 24 years to have the second eclipse. I never thought we'd see the second eclipse so soon, because it's happening right here on the New York State budget right now. Total darkness.
Senate Finance Committee Chair Liz Krueger, who is part of the Democratic majority, admits there is frustration over the budget delays. But she says her constituents would rather have a good budget that's slightly late than an on-time spending plan that doesn't address some key issues.
As long as we are paying our bills, we are assuring people that the government of New York State continues to operate. There is no interference in any issue or work that needs to be done. I actually think our constituents probably are talking to us about specific issues in the budget that they hope are in the final budget, or hope are not, or they hope are not in. And I think that's exactly what we are trying to do.
Krueger says a budget agreement might be reached next week before the Passover holiday begins on April 22nd, but she concedes it might not be. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
And thank you, Karen, for that report. This is Radio Catskill. We are your public radio station, local news, culture, and NPR. And we are still looking for your support. Just making that note here during the local edition. We get into the next story. You can give me a call at 845-482-4141. That's 845-482-4141. And that next story is our regularly check-in. Chris Rowley of Shawangunk Journal recently spoke with Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio. Talk about the latest happenings in Ellenville. And their discussion starts with the potential establishment of a dog park in the village, exploring its implications for local residents. And interestingly, they also get into the historical anecdote that an Asian elephant might be buried at the proposed site for the dog park. The dog park. Thank you.
It's in the process. It hasn't actually been permitted, granted, or whatever yet. However, the sentiment on the Wawasing Town Board has been strongly in favor. At least three board members said that they're in favor of it. It's likely to happen now when the effort to park is granted there. But it's a nice piece of land. It's open field with trees screening it at one end and trees on another side. Next to it, right next to it, is a small park that's called Bob Mangles Botanic Garden. And that dates back to, I think, to the 60s. And it's flower garden area. And that's nice. But that's not really where the dog park will be for this empty field area, which is quite reasonably extensive. There's about 8 acres there. And the idea is that since it's already part fenced, that they can raise the money privately to fence it off completely, complete the fencing, and put in gates, and maybe, and as soon as possible, create a small dog area within the park, because it's a good idea to separate little dogs from the big dogs. I think everybody who has dogs or likes dogs will be on board with this. What's good about it is it's not really close to any houses. There's a neighborhood there, but they're up the road, up the street a little bit, or across on another street. So there's a reasonable amount of space there. There's also a reasonable amount of parking area there too, either along the street as it is now, planned by Elena Santagard, she has two hats. She's in the coffee, the Citizens of Forward Facing Ellenville, and she's also on the Town and Village Parks and Recreation Commission. And she's got a good view of this from both those angles. Anyway, she provided a pretty good, no, an excellent, actually, presentation. And I think it could be good. So there's good drainage in the field, because mud is a real, you don't want mud, right? Dogs love mud, but there's reasonable nearby public parking. There can be seating there for some people, so people can sit while the dogs run around. Social development and innovation. And people do enjoy visiting and talking to other dog owners. It's a great kind of way to get to know people. Of course, you have to have a dog, but which you may not want. But that's another thing. Anyway, it must not be near a playground with little children, which is
really
one of the reasons why it's not suggested for either Boom Road Park or Lippmann Park in the town of Wolversing and the village of Ellenville, because those both have playgrounds. So it shouldn't be too close to private residences, which takes out other parks in the town and the village. So this is the parcel of land that really works. It's set between the Beer Kill and the Fantine Kill, right where they join the Run Creek. So it's well out of the way of just about everything. Anyway, it was once upon a time, it was, I think one of the reasons why it's an anomaly is that once upon a time, it belonged to Channel Master, to the Resnick family. I think the family probably owned it, or at least or the corporation owned it. And it was a softball field. It was where Channel Master's softball team played their home games. So that was its sort of origin. That was in the 50s. However, there's an interesting thing that happened in the 60s. In 1969, back then, they still had these small traveling circuses in New York State. I think that's an kind of a cultural thing that's very largely died away. But back then, they still had them. And they had animals, and they had all the circus things, the trapeze artists, the balancers, the strong men, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, they had elephants. This was the King, I think it was the King Brothers Circus.
Right.
Anyway, it had a group of elephants that were hauling up poles for the big top, for the big tent, on that field. And there were power lines of it. And one of the poles struck a power line, and the result was one of the elephants was electrocuted. And she just dropped dead right there. And her name was Hattie, which was derived from her original name, which was Adele, which was the name of the circus owner's wife. Circus owner's wife at that time. And somehow or other, Addie got converted to Hattie. So Hattie died, and that provided a problem. What do you do with, and she was a full-grown Asian elephant. They're not quite as big as the African elephants that we're more accustomed to, but they're still pretty big. And so there she was, dead. And the village did not have any equipment to dig a hole to bury her in. So they reached out to a farmer to the south, has a farm south of the village, Mr. Kelly. He came up with excavating equipment. They dug a large hole in that field, and they buried Hattie the elephant right there. There's an elephant buried in Ellenville. Or in kind of a war thing. Anyway, and I think, and this is just a personal thing, but I think Coffee will take this up, that if there's a dog park, and I think there will be, if there is, it should be called Hattie's Park. That's my thought. Because after all,
the elephant,
there's an elephant.
But,
you know, it seems like the only just thing you could do, this elephant died for human entertainment, and her name should live on the
park. I know that. I wonder if even if they did, that does happen. I wonder if they would have some kind of plaque.
Oh, you bet that. Yeah, this group, the Coffee People, they're really well informed on marketing and PR, and they've got all those skills in spades. They've got it. They've really got it. So I imagine there'll be a mounted plaque celebrating poor Hattie and her terrifying demise.
Right.
It could be a little fun little thing. I suspect that my wife will take Lizzie, one of our dogs, who is a sociable dog, and we'll get in the car take her down there to say hello to other dogs.
Yeah.
Our other dog, no, he doesn't like to leave the property. He stays here. He's defending everything constantly.
I know that not all dogs are made out for a dog park sometimes. I remember I had a dog and who wasn't friendly to other dogs. It was a rescue dog. And then we took it to the dog park, and it was a really bad experience, unfortunately. Well, it's unfortunate because I've been to other dog parks and how dogs get along, and it's a good, like you mentioned before, it's a good social thing, not only for the dogs, but also for people to meet other people with dogs and things like that. It's positive all around.
Yeah, it is. I think it's a very good socializing thing.
It definitely can be a very good socializing thing. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Chris Rowley from the Schwarmkopf Journal, letting us know what's happening in Ellenville. And looking at Ellenville, Ellenville's looking to collect some taxes before they hand out any permits. What can you tell us about this?
I think it's an overdue legal development for the village of Ellenville Dan Pollan, the new, how long would we call him new? Relatively new, anyway, building inspector, code enforcement officer, suggested at the last village board meeting that the village move to pass a law modeled on the city of Beacon's law, which says that if you are not in compliance with your taxes, if you haven't paid the village tax, if you owe the money, expect the yielding and services. That means no permits and no COs. So anybody who is out of whack on their taxes and is wants to get a building permit for something, you're out of luck. And everybody, I know there's lots of stuff that's not permitted, people put up. That's the way it is until they or whoever inherits it tries to sell it, at which point they find, they can find, they're in a complete nightmare. Because if it's not permitted, oh, that swimming pool you put in, you don't have a permit, it's got to be filled in. Yeah, these things happen. And people are blithely of how expensive what mistakes they're making can be. So anyway, that was I thought that was an interesting development. And the village attorney, he's looking into it. He thinks that the city of Beacon's law, which it's going to be modeled on, is legal and correct. And I suspect that the village of Ellenville will have a resolution on this pretty soon, probably next meeting, and it will become law shortly after.
And listen, this is an effort to recoup tax money.
This is an effort to stop people thinking they can cheat on the village. The village desperately needs tax money to be paid on time because it's really teetering along the edge of a precipice. Anyway, so this is another way to add some pressure in that area. And I thought it's pretty good. Yeah.
Good stories. You covered the gamut again. You went from dog parks to taxes.
Okay, cool. Okay. All right. Everybody have a good weekend. Take care now.
Thanks so much, Chris. We appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Hi, my name is Caitlin Mihalik, and I teach high school biology in Washington, D.C. Part of the curriculum is to do this task on gene editing. And so I found this recent article at the time that Rob Stein wrote about sickle cell and gene editing, specifically using CRISPR, to help this woman, Victoria Gray. Most of my students are African American, so I thought it was very relevant because most of my students know of sickle cell anemia. They might know of someone who's a carrier, might know someone who has it. So it was a pretty personal and meaningful story to a lot of my students, and it helped pique their interest for the task on looking at gene editing and CRISPR. Representation in journalism matters to the students in my classroom and so many others. Your support ensures we hear from a variety of voices. Please give to the station today.
Support Radio Catskills Spring Fun Drive at WJFFradio.org.
It's WJFFradio.org. You make your donation at WJFFradio.org. You can also give me a call on the phone when we get into this next story. Once it's playing, I'll take your donation over the phone at 845-482-4141. There's still time to help us make this challenge that we got during the news. 845-482-4141. Or go to WJFFradio.org. Well, here we are. It's the Local Edition on a Friday. And scientists are monitoring the spread of bird flu in dairy cattle and other mammals to see how the virus is changing. And so far, there are no alarming signs that it poses a new risk to humans. But how widespread is the virus in dairy cattle? And what could this mean for humans? Tim Bruno spoke to Dr. Jody Galadic, chief epidemiologist at Garnet Health. And we should note that Garnet Health is a financial supporter of WJFF.
So what I can tell you is that we've had, outbreaks and things like that with, it's called highly pathogenic avian influenza. And the reason they name it that is because it is highly pathogenic to birds, just both wild and domesticated, but we mostly see it in wild birds. And we do see periods of time where we see the disease in wild birds. They can pass it on to domesticated animals, Recently, what they've been seeing is there was a case in Texas where it was in dairy cows. And they did have dairy cows that did test positive for the avian influenza. Then some of these cows also went to Michigan, and they did find some of the cows from Michigan were also sick. I think this is typically you don't see it in a lot of other animals, but you can. And so there was one that there's a, you know, they want to make sure people are aware that if they work with these domesticated animals or if they are around birds or wild birds, that they're aware, because we do see cases in livestock and wild animals throughout the United States. They did recently put a notice out yesterday that there was one case of a worker that worked with these cows that did test positive for avian influenza. He had conjunctivitis. He received treatment and he was recovering. So that's been the first case that has been transmitted to humans since 2022, when that was again seen in livestock to a person. But it's very, it's not common. The risk to the general public is very, very low.
The FDA had said that the commercial supply of pasteurized milk, it remains safe, but that it, and that it does not currently have any concerns. Is that because the pasteurization process will kill influenza?
Yes, and so that's the reason why also typically the FDA will also, if the animal is sick, they won't use that milk for human consumption.
Raw milk has become increasingly more popular in the United States. Is that a concern, though, that it could possibly be contracted through consuming raw milk or other dairy?
There is concern for that. That's why it's recommended to avoid unpasteurized milk and dairy, not just for avian influenza. There are other diseases that we see in raw milk. So just in general, it's recommended that if you're going to consume those dairy products, to consume pasteurized.
So far, these cases have been in dairy cows and not those used for meat. Is there any concern about meat in the meat supply?
Not at this time. There, you know, it is avian influenza, so there is concern for, you know, chicken and other animals. You can see it in the wild also. So one thing they recommend is that don't handle sick or, you know, dead animal carcasses, especially birds and things like that, without proper equipment. So if you do, and, you know, if you do work in a poultry plant, you know, you have to keep in mind, like, watching the animals, seeing any sick animals, making sure that you're going, you know, to whoever your manager is, letting them know that that's occurring.
I guess this is probably a good time to remind folks at the consumer level that, you know, if you're handling raw meat, there are simple steps that you should always follow to avoid getting any kind of contamination or sickness.
Yes. In general, when you're handling raw meat, especially raw chicken, you want to make sure that you're washing your hands, you know, before and after handling the meat, wiping down the areas that you are, and cleaning the areas that you are preparing the raw meat, making sure that you cook it to the appropriate temperature. The biggest thing is you want to make sure that you're not cross-contaminating, also that, you know, you cut up chicken and then you cut up, you know, something that you're not going to cook in the same area without cleaning the area properly and washing your hands properly.
What about eggs? Any concerns with eggs?
No, not at this point in time. And I think even in the poultry process, there's not, again, we had outbreaks in the past with avian influenza, which again, when that happens, the poultry farmers are aware. A lot of times it will cause a bottleneck because they'll have to unfortunately destroy the chickens, and so they won't sell those products. And so sometimes we will see a decrease because they just don't have as many hens laying and things like that. But as of right now, it looks like this is just in dairy cows.
And we were talking about these dairy cows mainly in Texas, but there has been some detection of bird flu in New York City. This week, some birds found in New York City parks and green spaces were seen to have the disease. Again, what should folks know about that, something that's happening a little more close to home?
Yeah, and again, avian influenza typically happens in wild birds. And what happens is wild birds can pass it to domesticated animals or animals used for the food chain, you know, because it can be in their feces, it can be in their saliva. So there can be transmission from wild birds. So in general, you know, don't handle sick birds, don't handle the carcasses, without proper PPE or proper protective equipment is typically an N95 mask, goggles, and gloves. So again, if you don't need to touch the carcass, I would avoid touching the carcass or handling a sick animal.
And I think it's also important to note if someone does come across a sick bird or sick animal, they should reach out to the Department of Environmental Conservation to report that. It's important also to emphasize that there have only been two humans infected with bird flu in the United States since 2022, including the one we were talking about in Texas. So it is very rare, but people should just maintain some sense of caution that they always would sort of maintain.
Right, and just situational awareness of what's going on. And so if you see something that you think is suspicious, obviously reach out to the proper authorities to discuss it.
Thank you so much for joining us today and for your help with understanding it, Dr. Jody Galadik, the epidemiologist for Garnet Health.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Tim. And this is the local edition, and that's almost the end of the show. Almost. We do have one more thing. I've been telling you about this generous challenge that we had from Michael Sussman and Sussman & Associates, a $500 challenge we had all through the news. And we can let you know now that we have made that challenge. Thank you to everybody that helped us with that. And the challenge has been taken off the decks. The final donor that ended the challenge to close it out is a listener, Leif, who's also a volunteer and a longtime supporter and participant in Radio Catskill. And I figured we'd close out the show by hearing a little bit from Leif, because we've been asking people how they first came to public radio. And Leif has an interesting story here. But you can join Leif by making your donation now at WJFFradio.org.
I was introduced to Radio Catskill before I can remember. So I have to go like all the way back to the beginning. And you can edit this all down. I was born in Grahamsville, and at the time, my family was looking to move somewhere else in the county. And they ended up deciding to move to Jeffersonville because in large part because at the time that's where the WJFF studios were. And my parents thought that that was the coolest thing to have as a big piece of a local community. And so I ended up growing up in Jeffersonville in large part because Radio Catskill was there at the time. And so my older sister and my dad both volunteered there before I started volunteering there, and then I started volunteering there when I was in right around eighth grade, and I stuck with it up through senior year with, at the time, it was the Youth Radio Project, and I learned so much about writing and communicating and how radio stations work, and it was just such a big part of my upbringing, so it's a big part of me.
What do you value most about Radio Catskill?
One of the things I value the most about Radio Catskill is that it brings our community together in, I think, a really special way. So I was just reading the other day that the American Psychological Association just put out an article saying that Americans are more lonely than their European counterparts, and we're some of the loneliest people on the planet. And I think a big part of that is that in so many areas, we lack centers of community where people can come together and feel connected to something that's bigger than just themselves. And WJFF does that in such a big way in the listening community in Radio Catskill. The fact that we have 114 active volunteers with Radio Catskill says so much about how people come together to participate actively in Radio Catskill. But the fact that we have people that are willing to chip in a few dollars to Radio Catskill and support our efforts says so much as well. And then the fact that people are willing to listen and get involved and show up, I think says a lot about our role in the community and making people feel less lonely and more connected. So do your part to help bring this community together. Support Radio Catskill today. Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Thank you so much, Leif. And that's going to do it for the local edition tonight. I want to thank you so much for listening and remind you that, yes, do what Leif says. Go to WJFFradio.org. Make your donation now. We get into the daily. You can also give me a call here. I'll take your donation on the phone at 845-482-4141. I've been your host, Jason Dole, in for Patricio Rubio this Friday evening. Thank you so much for listening. We got the daily coming up next, and then we get into our amazing Friday night music lineup of local music shows. You don't want to miss it. It's all still to come here on this Friday night, and the fun drive rolls on. We're still about 38, 30.